Blog Talk Radio.
This fall, the Fantasy Sports Channel will make history
all over again
with even more live fantasy sports radio than anywhere on the planet. At least 12 hours of fantasy football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus more fantasy sports talk every Saturday and Sunday. More than 50 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business.
Try getting that on your radio dial.
The Fantasy Sports Channel. Only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
It's strategy night in America and red versus blue. Here we go, 60 seconds.
Work it, make it, do it.
Make sense, harder, better, faster,
stronger.
That don't kill me. Can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up, man. Cause I can't wait much longer. I know I got to be right now. Cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night, man. That's how long I've been on ya.
Let's get lost tonight. You could be my Black Kate Moss tonight.
One bleeds red and one bleeds blue. Two friends, one heated rivalry. It's intense. It's no holds barred. It's game time. On Red versus Blue Sports Talk Radio with your hosts Scott Atkins and Michael Trent. Scott and Mike and their versatility bring new light to many topics in and out of the world of fantasy sports. Guests can reach the show by calling 347-324-5404. Red versus Blue Sports Talk Radio, where Planet Red and Big Blue Nation collide. Let's hope they're still friends afterwards. Here they are, Scott and Mike.
Live, Friday, July 30, 2010. Friday night, it's Red vs. Blue. High Stakes Fantasy Radio. Live with your host, Scott Atkins, Team Legacy in the world of high-stakes fantasy football. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Red vs. Blue Sports Talk Radio. Wherever you may be, thanks for making us part of your night. I'm always joined by my Big Blue co-host from Brandenburg, Kentucky, Michael Trent. And, Mike, you held your own with the Sharks last night. That's what they're saying in the chat room. You drafted in pros versus Joes, and you came out with a pretty good team, buddy.
Well, thank you, Scott, and glad to have everybody on board. You know, it was a lot of fun to go through this with all the pros and Joes, and, you know, I'm a Joe, and I hope the Joes come out in the on the top end of the spectrum, so to speak. But it was fun. It lasted a while, but we were able to make it through. And I'd like to break down my whole division and the league and the way it went down.
Well, Mike, you were in there. We've got a great crew in the chat room here, Red versus Blue. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We are just a couple of guys that love the industry of high stakes fantasy football, and we love talking about fantasy football with you tonight. It's strategy night in America with Red versus Blue. We're going to be breaking down ADP, recent ADP in the drafts that we've been experiencing this past week. The Pros versus Joes competition gave us a great look and great insight into this oddity that is the 1.5 points per reception for tight ends. I'll tell you, Mike, I've never seen anything like it. The FFPC, what they've done with this scoring system in particular, causes something different that we don't see in the other leagues. And what that is, I like to refer to it as the birth of tight end panic, Mike. People take tight ends all over the board. You're seeing two and three go as early as the end of the first round and definitely, you know, three or four by the end of the second round. And then it's just tight end panic throughout the rest of the draft till they're all gone.
Right, and you know that's what I experienced last night with the draft, and you know it's just like tight end, and you know I'm thinking, well now hold on here, you can still get something and wait on a tight end a little bit and maybe get some value, but it just depends on what you want. The tight ends, there's three or four of them that stand out, but other than that, you better stand pat. That's the way I feel.
Well, we're going to be breaking down that ADP. We're also going to look at who's rising and who's falling in these drafts. You know, there's just some things that are going to happen today that you're seeing in drafts that I guarantee you won't happen in September. And that's what we need to be thinking about, because if you're playing your strategy too tight and too strict on a certain way, when you get to Vegas, there's nothing like being, you know, you can be prepared as much with the ADP, but if you're not ready for what's going to happen, you know,
right,
being on the clock and being unprepared, there's nothing like it, and it causes you to make sometimes an irrational decision. Now, you know, we've got a very experienced crowd in our chat room. I would venture to guess that of any show, any podcast in the country, Mike, the crew at Red vs. Blue is the most experienced, high-stakes crowd there is. And so, you know, when we break down strategy information, you might listen to this show, and you might think, oh, a lot of these things are just kind of on the fringe, because we don't discuss the average topics that the casual fantasy player might, you know, need to listen to, like what does the top four look like, or what, you know, why do we take so many wide receivers in draft? We know this already. These guys don't want to hear that. They want to hear something that they don't know, or maybe just need to be reminded of, because a lot of times as drafters, we operate on a surface level of things that we're all, you know, the basic things that you think about, but if you don't constantly think about those ingrained traits, those things that you really need to remember as a high-stakes drafter, those are the things in the traps that get you into trouble when it comes out on draft day. So we're going to be talking a lot of strategy tonight. We're also going to be looking
at
– go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, the crew when they're jumping in, they know what they're talking about. And everybody needs to be a part of that to jump in, with the chat room, and because you can learn a lot of things from the crew. Because let's face it, the crew is a lot of high stakes owners that they know what they're talking about. They know what's going on, and it's good conversation, and it makes all of us better in the high stakes fantasy football industry.
So we do have a lot to talk about. We're gonna go ahead and get started, though, with this injury news, this late-breaking news, Mike. Dez Bryant confirmed high ankle sprain today while running some routes and getting into some contact. And it sounds like from Jerry Jones, he's out 4 to 6 weeks with this ankle sprain. Now, Mike, this is kind of good news and bad news. Maybe some bad news for Dez Bryant dynasty owners counting on him for, you know, to revive their, you know, beginning of the year progress with their wide receiver corps. Good news for Dez Bryant fans who are looking to profit off of him maybe falling in some drafts because of this injury. Let's face it, he's not going to be practicing. People aren't going to be drafting him as high. And that's going to lead to, you know, some of this Dez Bryant maybe, picking him up a little bit later than we normally do. Now, in these pros versus Joe's draft, it was kind of interesting to see, you know, just exactly where he was going, because some drafts you saw him go early, some drafts you saw him go late. Mike, whereabouts, do you have your draft board in front of you?
Yes.
Okay.
I told you a month ago, I'm a big Dallas Cowboy fan, but I really am not a fan of Dez Bryant. There's a problem there. I didn't like it from the word go. The kid has a ton of talent. I've got my draft board in front of me, but it doesn't matter, because Dez Bryant is a big chance. There was no way I was going to take him.
Well, he went as early. I've got the ADP from all the pros versus Joes right here. If you guys want to know a player, obviously he's there to be researched, but I've got it all right here. And if you'd like to get a copy of this, feel free to email the show. And you can email the show at info@fantasyplayersassociation.com. Obviously, I want to give a shout-out real quick to the Tweeple to follow us on Twitter. At Red Blue Radio is our address, and at VFPA, since we're involved with the Fantasy Players Association. Back to Dez Bryant, his low ADP was 6'10". His high ADP was 9'1". So you really got a chance to see him as high as the 6th and as low as the 9th. somewhere in there, in the seventh and the eighth, was where you were kind of, you know, picking him off if you wanted him. It's interesting to see that Vincent Jackson, he's sandwiched in between Vincent Jackson and Malcolm Floyd. And Vincent Jackson is still getting drafted ahead of Malcolm Floyd, Mike, and I just don't understand it because the risk does not – the risk is way too much for the reward. I mean, Vincent is a great opportunity, but, whoa, just big red flags here. You're missing out on him for way too long to be drafted that high. Vincent Jackson was drafted as high as 54. Now, if you look at 54, that's what, mid-fifth? And as low as 108. Now, that's a little better. That's a little bit better. That's the end of the 10th round, okay? I can handle a 10th round stab at Vincent Jackson, but I can't handle seeing him go in the 5th round. Who was thinking that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, and I don't understand it because, you know, Malcolm Floyd, he's already proven that he's an outstanding receiver for an explosive offense that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously I took Malcolm Floyd in round eight, and that made sense
Very
to
nice.
Me because, you know, it's just like this is a guy in San Diego with an explosive offense. Vincent Jackson here or there. Malcolm Floyd was a guy that, you know, he proved himself toward the end of the year last year. So, you know, Malcolm Floyd seemed like a reasonable spot in round eight.
Yeah, and it's just an interesting situation that you see there. Mike, you also got Legatu Nani, if I can say that right. And that's an interesting spot because you were able to take him so late. His average draft position was 206. Mike, this is the number two wide receiver. You know, actually, you know, you might even be able to call him 1A because if Malcolm Floyd gets the job, it's not like he's an established number one. From all accounts, it sounds like Floyd and Nani might be 1 and 1A. And you can get Nani, which you did also. His average draft position was 206. I mean, that is super late. That's one of the last picks in the draft. And being able to snag him, Phillip Rivers is definitely going to put up the ball. You got him in 17th round. Come on.
Yeah. You know what, Scott? I'm really happy with that. You know, to get a wide receiver with a ton of ability and I always like to look at what have you done for me lately. Well, Nani, what he did in the last 4 or 5 weeks of last year was incredible. So those are the kind of guys I'm looking for, and those are kind of guys that I really want. I want to comment real quick on Ryan Matthews. I took Ryan Matthews a little bit early, you know, compared to some other believers or whatever, but I love Ryan Matthews in that spot.
He's your guy.
He is. He's another San Diego Charger. He's a rookie, and he's in a tough spot. But you know, when you got Ray Rice and Roddy White right off the bat, then I feel good about taking Ryan Matthews to fill the bill and you know, get things done for San Diego. So I'm not concerned, worried one bit at all because that offense is that explosive.
Well, I'm going to give you your props on that draft too, Mike. I was watching. Obviously, I had a few conversations with you, and I was congratulating you on you know what you were doing. You're able to stay focused in a draft like that. But if you remember, if you go back to the archives of Red versus Blue, we were talking about Ryan Matthews before the draft because he was just looking fantastic. He was really rising up draft boards, and I remember then he kind of caught your eye after our episode. And I think players have to remember, you know, there's some guys that are just complete, you know, mysteries at times. It's just guys that we won't draft because we just can't get our heads around who exactly they are and what do they bring to the table. That's the hardest thing on some of these guys. I'll give you an example, Mike. For me, I've got a guy that I can't get my head around at all. His name's Jacoby Jones, okay? And when I hear and read stories about Jacoby Jones this, Jacoby Jones that, I don't understand it, and I can't, and it's not somebody I can just dig into. I need somebody to tell me what's up with Jacoby Jones because I don't get it. So he'll never be a guy I'm drafted until I get it. So for those guys that are watching and participating in these drafts and you're looking at these guys, maybe you're somebody that says, I don't get Ryan Matthews. I don't get paying a second-round price for a guy who's a rookie. You know, I'll take a chance on a rookie, but not a second-round price on a rookie, right? I mean, that's a rational decision for somebody, especially in the high-stakes industry. When you're spending $1,500 or $2,000, you don't want to put your money on a rookie, especially if you don't watch a lot of college football and you don't know how he's gonna be able to pass protect well. Is he gonna be able to take care of Rivers back there, or what's that mean for Sproles in the backfield? So, you know, there's a lot of guys I'm sure that are like me that says, "Gosh, can I take Matthews?" Well, you like Matthews, and I just want to remind everybody at the crew here at Red versus Blue, the body of work that we're talking about with this Ryan Matthews. First of all, you got to remember, San Diego wanted this guy so bad, this kid, that they moved up in the draft to grab him. At Fresno State, not a great football school, but still a respectable school, 1,800 yards in his senior season, 276 carries, 18 touchdowns. That's the bare surface stuff, right?
Yep.
North Turner has already said that he envisions Ryan Matthews. He went on the record with this. You can find it. If you just Google North Turner envisions Matthews, you'll find it. He went on record saying 250 carries and 40 catches for this guy. That's what he sees the type of back if Ryan Matthews is. And you got to remember, when North Turner says something, I mean, as far as running back goes, he can kind of back it up, Mike. I mean, yeah, he fell into the lap of LT and he managed him, but he also had Emmitt Smith under him. He had Steven Davis under him. These are great running backs. So looking back at Ryan Matthews again, with this type of upside in this offense, Look at the body of work in his college career. Just look at his senior season. This kid is explosive, Mike. Look at this. 8 games in his senior season, he had at least a 40-yard run. Okay, that's pretty incredible. In 8 different games, he broke off a 40-yard run. So he's a big-time hitter and a big-time player. Okay?
Well,
he's got the perfect build for it. And Boise State, he played Boise State, went off for over 230 yards. He had touchdown runs of 69, 60, and 68 yards. Okay, that's enough. Matthews definitely has the big play potential every time he touches the ball. You put him in a San Diego offense, and, okay, all bets are off, Mike. A second-round price. If he's getting 250 carries and 40 catches, he's a top 10 back.
Well, the one thing I looked about, you know, I'm thinking, well, first off, I've got Ray Rice. Solid. I got Roddy White, and then, you know, I'm thinking, well, I can go high for a quarterback, say in the Drew Brees area, but you know what? I was like, I'm going to wait on quarterback for a bit, and I'm going to get Ryan Matthews because I really believe that Ryan Matthews is going to be solid, and I don't want to let this guy slip away. As a matter of fact, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he'd have gone as early as late round two or early round three. But I went ahead and got him in early round three, but he was the guy that I wanted. And, you know, it just it fell into place.
Well, and so, this is your guy. This is somebody that you've been, you know, looking at hard now. They are talking about, Dave wants to know about the offensive line in the chat room, and that is a concern. They have a lot of work to do there, and we'll have to see though if that's more injury related.
What's going to happen with that offense and the offensive line is the pass is going to come first and the run will come second, and you know that's kind of a reversal type of deal. What happens with most teams is, you know, most times the run first, then you pass. Well, with this team, I think it's going to come pass first, and then the run sneaks in. Ryan Matthews is a perfect fit for that.
Yeah, so, you know, it is a steep price to pay. You've got a lot of other guys to consider there. You're looking at Ryan Matthews. You know, there's Sean Green is there. Let's look at Sean Green. I mean, that's a 600-carry offense last year. How many carries do they get this year? It's the same offense, right? Or even a little bit better. You get a better defense, and you're going to get a ton of red zone looks. I mean, you're just going to get an absolute ton of red zone looks. Last year, Thomas Jones had over, I think, 50 red zone, you know, looks last year. So, you know, Sean Green's going to get that too. And you know, you've got to factor him for, you know, close to 300 carries. I mean, unless you see LaDainian Tomlinson getting over 200 or 250. And then an average yards per carry for him. I mean, if Thomas Jones can get over 4, you know Sean Green's good for 4.5. I mean, that's what they averaged last year. So a 4 for him is, you know, to me, 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. Now, the question with Sean Green is, will he get the catches? And I think it's interesting to note that while he hasn't been known to catch the ball, it's not that they haven't scouted this kid to say he can't catch the ball. It's the fact they haven't asked him to catch it. In college, they didn't ask him. They didn't have an offense like that. In the Jets, you know, they do toss to the backs. They toss to Leon Washington quite a bit. And I think Thomas Jones had maybe 10 or 15 catches. But so the lead back doesn't typically get that catch. But we'll see what happens next year. He could get 10 or 20.
No, the lead back doesn't necessarily get that. But right now, I guarantee you, tomorrow morning when they wake up, they're going to learn how to do that. They've got to learn how to do that. That's just part of the offense. That's part of why they've been drafted to do this. So they're going to learn how to do that, catch the ball in the backfield. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about anything about Ryan Matthews or anything about some of these young kids. I mean, that's just something that they have to learn how to do.
Yep. So let's take a look at, you know, other back there you've got to think about is No. Sean Moreno, too. I mean, this is a kid last year. His ADP in, let's see, it was interesting, Mike. This was a very interesting call in your draft. No. Sean Moreno slipped. This is a guy, let me show you his ADP. This will blow you away. He went as high as pick 18, okay, that's 2-6, and as low as pick 46. 46 is pick 410, gentlemen. So anywhere from 2-6 to 4-10, that tells you right there the parity that is rounds 2, 3, and 4. It is wild. Every draft is a different life of its own. You can't count on anything from the second through the fourth round. You just better be prepared for anything, and no holds barred.
Right. Well, the one thing, I took Anquan Boldin before No. Sean. The only reason I had to do that, I felt like I needed to get another wide receiver and a wide receiver that is very comfortable in their atmosphere, and that was Anquan Boldin. No. Sean Moreno, you know, it could have been an oversight, but still to this day, with my team and what was shaping out and what I'm looking forward to in rounds, say, 5, 6, 7, 8, I had to take Anquan Boldin at that point.
Well, it was an interesting decision. I don't know if I could if I could do it. You can get so much value. You know, wide receivers like these Floyds and Nenes, you can't get that at running back. But I can't knock that pick, Mike. I mean, Anquan Boldin has a body of work that speaks for itself. It's a new offense for him and a new quarterback. That's always a little bit scary. Moreno, 250 carries last year, 28 catches and a timeshare. You would almost think that he is going to get more work, right? I mean, Corell Buckhalter, it's his second year in the offense. So Moreno it's interesting to know, 54 red zone looks last year. So that number, you know, might go up, might go down, depending on, you know, the offense for Denver and how, you know, they develop. I find it interesting that these guys are continuing. You never know what's going on in Denver. Last year, Eddie Royal is supposed to make this big, you know, he had a great rookie season. He comes out, he didn't do anything in year two, and now they're going back and saying the offense is going to be ran through Eddie Royal, you know, that he's going to be the leading reception guy. I just don't understand what's going on with Eddie Royal. Complete mystery. I'll never draft him again.
Well, you know, I don't know what's going on with Denver, and, you know, it's hard to tell. I think that's why, Gordon, I mean, everybody in fantasy football-wise from Denver has slid. I mean, their fantasy value has gone down so much because nobody knows what's going on. There's no cohesiveness there. But somebody's going to break out. Somebody's going to break out. It could be Eddie Royal. Who knows who it may be, but somebody will break out this year. But it's hard to peg them right now.
Well, so we've covered Dez Bryant. Wes Welker's another guy we have to just talk about because, again, anytime you're Tom Brady's favorite toy, you're getting a lot of work, and that's fantasy gold, right? Well, Wes Welker over this week in the Pros versus Joe's draft, thanks to Darren Armani at FantasyMojo.com for giving us this ADP information so we could release it on the show tonight. As low as pick 51, which is 5-3, and as high as pick 64 at 6-4. So, you know, he's going right in that area after the big dogs have came off the board, the Steve Smiths, the Hakeem Nicks, the Ocho Cincos. He's going, you know, matter of fact, he's going before Crabtree and Bo, which is a little surprising considering the type of injury that he had. But here we are again. It's been less than a year, and they're already seeing him practice on the sidelines like it's no big deal. So, Wes Welker, Mike, could you stomach paying a fifth round pick for a guy that just tore his ACL?
No, I cannot. I cannot. I think Wes Welker could be a good. Pick at that spot, but I can also see other wide receivers that could be a better pick because I don't want to take a chance. I don't want to take a chance. I think Wes Welker will be fine. I think Tom Brady will be fine. I think New England's going to be fine. But I still, there's just something there.
Well, and again, it's one of those things. Do you take a risk in your main event challenges? And obviously the answer is no. You don't pay $1,500 or $2,000 to take a risk on Wes Welker. Now, you know, there's people on the side watching this Wes Welker, and they're saying he's ready to go. But I just find it hard to take my draft and say, you know what, I'm going to turn down a guy who I know is healthy at this point to take a guy like Welker, and I don't know how that knee's going to hold up at the first contact. You know, you get hit. He takes a bad step. I mean, that's so early. It's almost like his just love for the game is blinding the fact that normal receivers don't do this. Normal players. Look, Tom Brady, he took a full year off, and you saw what he looked like last year. He looked okay, but he wasn't Tom Brady. You got Tom Brady last night, and look, you were able to get value in Tom Brady. You didn't have to pay the prices that, you know, Tom Brady, let's face it, he's a Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, tier Peyton Manning-type quarterback every year. And last year was his first year back off the ACL. This year, you're able to get a discount on Tom Brady. So you're able to get – look, Tom Brady went at pick 60, as late as pick 60, as early as pick 34. So he's going after the big dogs, but you're able to wait and pick him up. If you could give him to me at the end of the fifth round, the 5-6 turn, I'm going to take it every single time, Mike.
Yeah, and you know what? And that was the thing about it. I'm thinking – you know, I was kind of edgy about Tom Brady. When I went ahead and took him in the fifth round, I'm going, well, I need a quarterback, and what should I do? And, could there be a holdout situation? Nah, that's not going to shape out. Let me go ahead and get Tom Brady. So what I was thinking is, what the stock of Tom Brady, how come he's fallen off so much? Is it because of the injury year or what? And, you know, I'm like, let's go ahead and take him because he's solid. He's good to go.
Yeah, there's not a great answer for it other than the fact that you don't want to spend a pick on a quarterback. And that makes sense. You know, like 2 years ago, I took Peyton Manning in the fifth round. I don't normally take a quarterback. Look, all of us here, the high-stakes players, you don't make money at these contests by taking your quarterback early. You never do. You look over at the other guys, and you're thankful that they're taking a quarterback because it's dropping that value to you that you've been waiting for. So take them. Everybody take them. But when it comes to the fifth round, you are pressed for a decision. And, you know, I remember Mike Santos a couple years ago in the World Championship, a great drafter, makes the league championship game quite often. He texts me and says, I just got Drew Brees. I'm like, what are you talking about? We don't take Drew Brees. We've been talking all year about strategy, and you take, well, it was the end of the fourth round. Okay? There comes a certain point where the quarterback does make sense, Mike. Now, that's something that's a little bit different for all of us, and I'd be happy to hear from any of the guys in the chat room on when that is, but I think it's somewhere when you can get an elite player for somebody that has a few question marks. Let's face it. I mean, around the Crabtree, Wes Welker, Felix Jones, Joe Adai area, these are the guys that have question marks, okay? When you have question marks, you don't take a question mark player for a quarterback that you have no questions about. That's why you saw in these drafts that Tom Brady and Romo both went ahead of those question mark players. That's the point at which you do take advantage of that quarterback falling. And you look over, I can see it. You know, I've been in these drafts. You're at the table, and you look at all the rest of the guys around you, and you're like, okay, all right, I'm going to do it. And you take your quarterback, and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. You had to do it.
Yeah. Well, absolutely, Scott. And, you know, I'm sitting there at five in the fifth round, and I'm going, if I don't get Brady right here, then I am going to be sunk. I'm going to be sunk because I'm going to have to take a tight end that really I don't care for. And I'm going to have to take a wide receiver running back that I probably don't care for.
Yeah.
So, there was a button that had to be pushed, and Tom Brady was it in that fifth round. That draft was very funny and very weird, but it was the way it worked out because, to be honest with you, I would love to sit and wait till the sixth, seventh round to take a quarterback. If I can't get some of the elite the way it pans out, I would love to sit and wait. But, you know, I couldn't sit and wait, and it was one of those slots.
Leroy Aces is in the chat room. He brings up a great point. Another name that you have to be paying attention to in these high-stakes drafts is Philip Rivers. Look at this ADP. ADP of pick 75. Okay, that's in the seventh round. He went as early as 6'5". Nobody took a chance on Philip Rivers higher than 6'5". Now, Mike, I found that blasphemous. Listen, this is Philip Rivers. This is the San Diego Superchargers, okay? Just because you lose a wide receiver does not mean your whole team that's been a dominant in this division for years goes through the crapper. One receiver does not make a star quarterback. Okay, that's like saying Peyton Manning loses Reggie Wayne. Well, what happens? Peyton Manning's still Peyton Manning. He throws the damn ball all over the field. And to see Philip Rivers last until the eighth round, 8'7", Mike. Somebody grabbed him at 8'7" and laughing their way to the bank.
Yeah, and that's a good point because Kevin Cobb went before Philip Rivers. You know, and Jay Cutler went before Philip Rivers. And that's mind-boggling in my opinion.
So, anyway, yeah, he's right there in that ballpark with Philip Rivers and Jay Cutler is. And, it's a great point he brings up. Those are the guys that, when you see that type of value, let's face it, there's question marks around those guys. And you could take one all day long, but I guarantee you, when you look back at your schedule at the end of the year and you look at your roster, you're going to feel so much better about having that guy in there instead of one of those question marks because, let's face it, this is all a gamble anyway. I pulled up a great article by our friend Matt Waldman at Football Guys. He writes for New York Times as well, Fifth Down Blogs. And the turnover at the running back position is insane, Mike. It's really unbelievable. The averages in the top 20, the backs you consider number one backs, it's interesting to note that about half of those guys that you consider new number one running backs were not drafted as one of the top 24 runners off the board, Mike. They weren't one of the top 24 drafted running backs. Now, that's alarming. You know, you're thinking, okay, these guys are definitely going to be in there. Well, guess what? They're not going to be. There's a turnover rate in the top 12 of 64% on average the last 3 years. 64% of the top 12 turns over, an average of 7.7. So close to 8 of the top 12 every year will be different than they were the following year. And that in of itself is just mind-blowing. Now, look at the drafts. Look what we saw this year, and tell me, Mike, look at your draft, and look at those running backs, and tell me which ones, you know, have an opportunity to be out. Now, you look at your first four, Chris Johnson, Adrian Peterson, Maurice Jones-Drew, and Ray Rice. You think they're safe bets, then you have to take them. But
right.
Somebody's not going to be there.
Well, and then you got to throw in Frank Gore and Rashard Mendenhall and guys like that. There is no guarantee, and that's something I posted on one of the sites last night. This draft, there is no guarantee. There is no guarantee at all that you've got a great player or a great team right now because it's a lot of guesswork, and all you're hoping for, quote, no injuries. No injuries, no injuries, and that's all you're hoping for. And you can go from there.
Well, we're trying to talk some strategy here tonight on Red versus Blue. 347-324-5404 is the number. Help us out with some of this. I'll tell you, there's just so much that we could talk about tonight. Again, we're breaking down the pros versus Joe's drafts, the 1.5 point per reception leagues. We're going to take a break from that and just take a look, Mike, real quick, at some of these ADPs that are climbing and falling. And, you know, one guy that we're watching that continues to rise up these draft boards that everybody, you know, you went into this season saying, man, this kid has a ton of potential. But you saw his draft stock was falling. Jamaal Charles. Second, mid third, we've been getting him. Well, as we get closer to this season, I was talking to a good friend the other day. You're not going to see this. You're not going to see him be there at that spot. He's a late first, early second guy now. He's climbing. The draft stock is climbing. And by the time Jamaal Charles gets to Vegas in September when these drafts happen, I'll guarantee you he's going to be up there late first, you know, early to mid second at the latest.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me a bit. I mean, Jamaal Charles, he keeps on rising, keeps on rising. But there's a lot of other players. I mean, I know Ryan Grant, Cedric Benson, guys like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking about a redraft, those are guys that, you know, what's their value? What's their value worth?
Well, they're definitely going to be up there. They're both on offenses that are going to get a lot of looks and a lot of touches. Cincinnati converted to that run-first, oriented offense, and so he's been cleared of all those issues. His ADP is right there as well, and it's going to be climbing. You watch. Cedric Benson's value is going to be climbing since he's been cleared. There are no question marks anymore, so you're going to see him start to climb anywhere from 29 to 59. I mean, look at that. That's 30 picks difference. 30-pick difference on Cedric Benson,
that's,
average of
yeah.
45. So he's right there at the end of the fourth round.
And that's
a great value for Cedric Benson.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Scott. And another thing is you had T.O., which to me, that's not adding a bunch, but they had to add Terrell Owens because of Antonio Brown's knee. So they had to add T.O. to the mix. Chad Ocho, Cinco, he wants him. So, this could be a pretty good offense because Carson Palmer is not going to – he's not going to go through any kind of bull crap. He's going to pretty much say, look here, T.O., this is the way we do things, and that's the way it's going to be done.
It is interesting Terrell Owens went as early after the news at pick 81. 81 was the earliest we saw Terrell Owens go, and I think that number will probably stay pretty steady, to be honest, maybe a little bit higher than that. You're looking at a seventh-round price right now for Terrell Owens. And look, let's face it, you get your lineup filled out and you want to take another flex, okay, take T.O. You know, I'm not gonna hate you for it. You know, that's a guy that obviously has all the talent in the world and still at this age, showing some signs of slowing down. He's not the player you drafted 3 or 4 years ago, but, he should be able to do – he should be capable of some games for Carson Palmer, who now is a very solid number two quarterback.
Well, the one thing that I'm thinking about with T.O. is, last year he was he averaged like 3.5 catches a game. Is he better than 3.5 catches a game? I don't think so. I don't think he's fantasy-wise, I don't think he's a viable option. To help the team out, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think he is.
Let's look at some other value here. Joseph Addai, 60 red zone touches last year. That's just incredible for a running back to get 60 red zone touches in a season. And obviously you've got the addition of Donald Brown. But, look, people are, again, sleeping on Joseph Addai. He went as early as pick 42, so nobody paid more than a 4-6 price, a mid-4th. But he went as late as pick 59. So, again, it tells you that the Addai doubters are still out there and they're still crawling. If you are fortunate enough to find yourself in a league like that you can get him at the end of the fifth round, you have to take him, Mike. Let's face it. He's a guy that's involved in the offense. He's going to get you 40 catches. He's going to get you close to 10 touchdowns, 8 touchdowns, and he's going to get you over 200 carries. Now, Donald Brown is still, going to be somebody that the Colts are going to take a hard look at this year because Adai's in a contract year. But Adai's going to play hard. And you thought that Donald Brown would be the guy that comes in and plays hard last year, and Adai, you know, being injury plagued all his season. But it's just the other way around last year. Adai was the one that looked dominant and looked great and fresh all the time, every time he touched the ball. And Donald Brown was just kind of injury dinged up all year. And when he got his chances, he didn't do much with him. He looked good, but he didn't do much. He wasn't as productive as Adai. And Adai is just one of those guys you're going to look back on, Mike, and, you know, you wait till the fifth round to get him. I mean, in a scenario like this where his ADP is at right now, you're going to see him play Houston in week one. And, you know, Houston's a decent matchup for him. It's not a difficult matchup for him. And Adai is still going to get you probably 80 yards. You know, in that game, I guarantee you the Colts score at least four touchdowns. So there's one for Wayne, one for Garcon, one for Dallas Clark, and probably one for Adai. Maybe even two. You never know. And he's going to get two touchdowns and 80 yards maybe, four or five catches for 35, 40 yards. You're going to be like, okay, there's another 25-point game. I let Adai slip past me again. You know, that's what's going to happen with Joe Adai. That's who he is.
Well, Scott, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I hate that term, but people are waiting for Joseph Adai to mess up. Joseph Adai is going to be fine. Donald Brown has a bright future in this league. As far as the Indianapolis Colts, they have a running back by committee. So if you're a fantasy owner, I got to be scared about either one of them because you don't know which one will emerge in which week. Donald Brown could do great in week two. Joseph Adai could do great in week three. It's a scary situation if you're a fantasy owner. If you're relying on those points week after week after week, that's why I don't want no part of either one of them because I think they're both going to be great.
Well, it's one of those situations, you know, but you're getting him in the fifth round, and that's where it gets interesting. You know, now, you could take an Ahmad Bradshaw, you know, somebody like that. Now, let's look at Ahmad Bradshaw. He was picked as early as 47. Somebody loved him. But he was picked as late as pick 104. There's no reason why an Ahmad Bradshaw lasts till pick 104. Look, that's in the ninth round. Somebody waited till the ninth round to take Ahmad Bradshaw, and what? If not, Jacobs is a starter. Ahmad Bradshaw is a starter here. You know, as long as he's healthy, you know, there's some concerns there. But look, running backs, there's concerns with all these running backs. You can't get carried away with injuries when they could be out in one play. You know, you just got to look at the situation, and he's going to be heavily involved. Ahmad Bradshaw is going to be involved at the goal line. He's going to be involved in receptions. The ninth round, is that somebody you want to take? Look, here's how you build your lineup. In strategy, an experienced drafter, you know, you don't take your quarterback early. You fill out your lineup with three running backs, three wide receivers, maybe four wide receivers and two running backs, except in these FFPC leagues where they're taking, you know, two tight ends early, maybe even three. I mean, it's really an enigma. But for the most part, you're filling up your lineup before, and then you get your quarterback in the eighth round or so, and then you start firing away maybe your backup quarterback, your backup tight end, so that you have those locked up, and then you start taking flyers, Mike. Let's look at Team Shocker's roster. Team Shocker won the $300,000 last year in the World Championship of Fantasy Football. Let's just look at that for a second. And his team, I want to read it to you, Mike. This is the team that won $300,000. You ready? Listen to this. His draft. Andre Johnson in the first, Chris Johnson in the second. Now, it's a great point that somebody brings up. He nailed the number one wide receiver and the number one running back in the first two rounds of the draft. Now, the only way you're going to be able to do that this year, okay, everybody feels like Chris Johnson is the number one running back, right? So you would have to be able to land the number one wide receiver somewhere in the second round. Now, Mike, do you see any of those wide receivers going in the second round being number one?
No.
Okay. I think there is some potential there. Obviously, with Roddy White, in Atlanta, being healthy, this is a guy that always performs.
No, I mean being that stud. Yeah, no, I cannot.
Yeah, I think maybe Roddy White has that potential. Obviously, Brandon Marshall has the talent, but I don't think in that offense he does that. Greg Jennings obviously has the potential. I mean, if Donald Driver goes down, Greg Jennings could be looking at your number one wide receiver in the league, being Aaron Rodgers' top target. So, you know, there's only so many ways that you could do that. Now, if Chris Johnson is not the number one running back and Andre Johnson is a lock for number one wide receiver, then you have to take a running back in the second or third round that you right. think could be number one. Now, the only guys that stand out to me, do you see any?
Well, Scott, the one thing, no, I don't. And the one where you're going with this, and I totally agree, is why do you take a quarterback or a tight end very early? You know, there's no reason to do that. But you know,
unless you're in the FFPC where you get 1.5 points per reception, you do take that tight end early. It makes sense.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's tight end. It's tight end greedy, and you know, it's just you get to a point to where, okay, do I take it? Either you take a tight end in round 2 or 3, or you don't. And if you don't take a tight end that early, you better hold off and hold off and hold off, and then you'll find somebody.
Well, and you can take this strategy for what it's worth. You have to remember the scoring systems. They're very important for all these contests. Speaking specifically of the World Championship, again, Team Shocker says Andre Johnson, Chris Johnson, followed it up with Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, and Reggie Bush. Now, look, he busted basically on the Reggie Bush pick. Now, he was startable, obviously. He had some games, but he hit on Ocho Cinco. He hit in the fifth round on Gates. He hit on Thomas Jones. He hit on Donald Driver. He hit on Romo in the eighth round, okay? He filled out his starting lineup there, Mike. He has Romo at quarterback, Gates at tight end. Then he has 3 running backs and 3 wide receivers, okay? Actually, Thomas Jones, Reggie Bush, and Chris Johnson. Now, it's interesting to note that he only has one other good pick the rest of the draft, the entire 20 rounds, this guy, Mike. Listen to the rest of the guys. Julius Jones, Dominic Hickson. Now he scores on Jamal Charles in the 11th round. That's what wins it for him. But then it's Chad Schillen, Matt Castle, Nate Washington, Sam Congato, Brandon Jackson, Rashard Jennings, Chad Pennington. I mean, he didn't do anything the rest of the draft. So what does that tell you? You have to hit on your starting lineup and get that thing filled, and then you can take flyers and take a dart and take a stab, and then you land that Jamal Charles-type pick, that type player that can win it for you. Look, he took safe picks. Antonio Gates, Thomas Jones, Donald Driver, 5, 6, and 7. That's what wins it for you. You can take a Joe Adai. He's pretty darn safe. He's not going anywhere unless he gets it. You can't predict injuries in this thing. You just can't. Donald Driver? There's nobody safer than Donald Driver.
You can't predict injuries, Scott, but you also have to back them up. He has to back them up. And, you know, that was very different. And you gotta take the best player available. I mean, once you build up your roster, take the best player available.
Yeah, but it's avoiding the players with question marks. That's the point here. I mean, okay, somebody, Chef Paul, you want to know about Matt Forte's ADP? He went anywhere from 40 to 54 last night, anywhere from 4-6 at his earliest, and that's still late for Matt Forte, 4-6 at his earliest to pick 54, which is the middle of the fifth. You know, so he's right there being drafted in the Javid Best, Joseph Addai area. Again, another back that is going to get a lot of work. He's going to be involved in the offense, going to catch you 50 balls, and you bring in Chester Taylor to also complement him so he doesn't wear it down, so he's not the only option. If you remember last year, they had like Khalil Bell or whatever his name was, some no-name was in there relieving Matt Forte because, look, that kid just can't take a pounding, you know, in this league. You've got to have some help. I love the move by bringing in Chester Taylor. I think he could have a great year as well as a complimentary player. He's not going to take Forte's job. I think we all can agree on that. Hopefully, we can realize that he's not going to take the job. He's just there to compliment Forte and make that a better tandem to support Jay Cutler and what they're doing. But, Mike, there's just a lot of question marks in some of these picks, and I just don't understand why you'd want to take a question mark when you can take a safe play and keep yourself in the game. You don't want to lose it in the first 8 rounds. Take your stabs in the next 12 rounds.
Scott, there's going to be a ton of question marks right now. That's what I posted on some boards. There's going to be a ton of question marks right now. It's only July 30th, and can you imagine Can you imagine the question marks we have after training camp, after some of these preseason games are going on? I mean, these drafts would totally change a month from now, but that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah. Let's move on. I want to bring up a couple of things here. I love the some of the information when I'm looking at matchups every week. I try not to let strength of schedule get too much into my head as a drafter, but it does have an impact. For example, I looked for Kurt Warner, and I took him over Tony Romo last year. I caught a lot of heat on that in the pre-draft last year, and I took him in the World Championship. And I did it because of his schedule in weeks 12 and 13 and throughout the playoffs. I looked at those and said, man, you got to win in those weeks. And I like his matchups as shootouts during that time period. And I think Romo and Warner were kind of a coin flip. A lot of people were like, oh, come on, Romo, you got to take him. But I like the playoff matchups better. And so I took him, and it did work out for me. But I always like to look at those matchups in weeks 12 and 13, the money weeks for a lot of these leagues, the World Championship and the FFPC especially, and try to see what's going on. Then I also like to take a peek at weeks 14, 15, and 16 to see who could win me that $300,000 or that $100,000 prize and see what they can do. And I just want to share some of this with you, Mike. One of the players that stands out to me is Ocho Cinco, okay? Week 12, a money week. Week 12, let's talk about what week 12 is. Week 12 is after the 11-week regular season in these high-stakes contests, the money's on the line in week 12. You're seeded as a 1 seed through a 4 seed at some point on week 12. You're one of those 4 seeds, and you have to play a money game, an elimination game, in week 12. Well, if you spent your pick on Ocho Cinco, his average draft position, let me pull it up, his ADP is 47, so you just picked. You just spent your fourth-round pick on Ocho Cinco. Week 12, he goes up against Revis, okay? He's on Revis Island week 12. I think he's going to avoid Chad Ocho Cinco just for the week 12 matchup. You can't just lose your week 12 matchup player unless you have a strategy to back him up and put somebody else in the lineup. It's just something I'm worried about, Mike. Let me move on. Week 13, another money matchup. If you make it to past week 12 and now you're in the championship game, this is where really the big cash is on the line. Your investment, your return on investment relies on week 13. And during that week on Revis Island, it's none other than Randy Moss. Now, Randy Moss can get you to the title game, but can he win the title game for you? Absolutely not. There's no way. We know what Randy Moss versus Revis gets you. He did it last year. He'll do it again. I think he snuck in a touchdown on a 2-for-7 type day. But the next game was even worse than that. He didn't even get the touchdown. He didn't even get the 6 points. So please be careful if you're thinking about drafting Ocho and Moss when you're on the clock. You got to think about 12-13. Look, guys, you got to take a note on this stuff. When we bring this type of stuff up, this is the stuff that you won't retain on draft day when you're on the clock and in the moment. You got to take a little note just to kind of remember it, because that's, you know, you're looking at player for player on the draft, and you're like, ah, I forgot about 12 and 13. You got to take a note. These are not the things that exist on our surface level. This is the stuff you got to dig down deep for and kind of keep that note, or maybe even just cross a little red line over Ocho Cinco, because he's on my do not draft list for that reason.
One thing about the draft last night, Scott, is, I want everybody to understand that, you know, when you have somebody ready, I mean, that could be, that could be nice. But you better have 3 or 4 ready, because chances are they're going to be gone, and you got to come up with a backup plan, so to speak, and then be able to get ready for another player that you need for wide receiver, running back. So Don't hedge your bet on one player, because chances are he's going to be gone.
Yeah. Well, and so again, and they're bringing up in the chat room, Marshall's another one. He's going to have to play Revis a couple of times, and including that, so that's going to be tough. Marshall, the game that Marshall has week 14 is against Revis, but I think it's interesting to note that he also follows it up. I'm not eliminating Marshall, because he also has a great 12 and 13 matchup against Oakland and Cleveland. And it's funny, when you think about Oakland, you think about cornerbacks, you think about Asamoah, right? He had a great rookie season, but did you know that Oakland, and again, look it up for yourself, They were number 32 against number one wide receivers last year. Look it up. It's fact. 32 in the league against number one wide receivers. They allow a ton. So Marshall actually gets a nice matchup. Unless Osamal just was not healthy last year, and I need to research that a little bit. But he takes on Oakland and Cleveland weeks 12 and 13. Those are great matchups. That's number 32 and number 23 against number one wide receivers. So he can get you to the playoffs. Now, week 14, you have to have a backup plan when he plays Revis. But he comes back and plays Buffalo and Detroit. Now, Buffalo is also a tough matchup. Number four defense against number one wide receivers. And then he plays Detroit, one of the worst. I mean, that's going to be a shootout, okay? Other matchups I see, Greg Jennings in the playoffs, week 14, he's playing Detroit. So, again, that's a reason that I'm looking at. I'm like, man, that's going to be some nice points he's putting up at the playoffs. But you've got to watch out for these defenses. When you're looking at your strength of schedule, for number one wide receivers, the top defenses were the Jets, New Orleans, Philly, Buffalo, Cincinnati, and Green Bay. I can round out the top 10 for you. Carolina, Baltimore, KC, and Dallas round out the top 10. If you're looking for defenses to exploit, look for Arizona. Look for Oakland. Look for St. Louis. Look for Detroit, Jacksonville, Seattle. These are the teams that, if you want to make some money, make sure that your matchups in week 12 and 13 look good. Case in point, Mike, a player that I don't know what you think about, but Steve Smith had a down year with Jake DeLome last year. He has Matt Moore this year. Great matchups. Week 12, he takes on Cleveland. Week 13, he takes on Seattle. Put it in the bank. Steve Smith will have a great playoff matchup and make somebody some money.
Right. Those are perfect situations. And plus, you know, he's going to be healthy. Everything's going to be fine. And this is going to be a perfect situation for Steve Smith owners. It's not just looking at week 1, 2, 3, because, you know, you can carry Steve Smith through week 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you move forward. And that's what makes Steve Smith and an owner a very happy person.
Well, everybody, I want to thank you guys. This hour just absolutely flew by. We're almost out of time here on Red vs. Blue. We've got a couple other things real quick. Just remember, you know, New Orleans is a great pass defense for the number one wide receivers. Look, they were number two in the league, okay? And if you don't believe me, you can look it up. They're the number two defense against number one wide receivers, and they've still got the talent to do it. Now, somebody mentions that that'll probably change up, and yes, it will. And you start to watch it pretty early. But it's still New Orleans. They haven't made a lot of moves, you know, in the negative direction. And look, that's why Garcon went off in the Super Bowl. Reggie Wayne was shut down 5 for 46. You're not going to get a lot on the number two passing defense against number one wide receivers. Reggie Wayne didn't do much. So, you know, that's just somebody that you want to watch out for if you're playing New Orleans or the Jets, Philly, Buffalo, or Cincy. Any of those guys, those are very improved defenses against the pass, and they're still strong this year. Okay, Mike, look, we had a fantastic time. Next week, you know the deal.
Yo.
It's the Fantasy Players Championship. It's the play-by-play commentary draft. Mike, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're super excited to be involved in that, and it's just going to be round by round, pick by pick. We're taking calls, and we're going to be drafting in the FPC as well. So it's going to be a lot of action here on Red vs. Blue. Make sure you don't miss the show. Mike, final thoughts on your Pros vs. Joe's draft.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Well, everybody, thanks for joining us. I've got a great chat room tonight. The crew, you guys have been fantastic, and we're going to roll out here. I want to give you a little bit of let's see what I can't find you here on this on some sound clips.
Oh, baby,
blue!
Woo!
Oh, here we go. Mike, if you get a chance, check out my Facebook page. I've got all the videos there of your number one picks, Michael Gilchrist. Who are the other ones? Teague. And he's the traitor. And I've got all your Kentucky recruits there, Calipari,
oh,
Golden
God.
Boys. We'll see you next week, gang.
You take away What I did was I made an adjustment on my putter.
You've been listening to Red vs. Blue Sports Talk Radio, where Planet Red and Big Blue Nation collide, with your hosts, Scott Atkins and Michael Trent. Please join us next time.